Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom at voicesofmontana.com. A lot of companies looking at Montana energy-wise. We know that. We're the center, it seems to be, of an AI data center boom, at least in exploration. We're curious about some of the information that's going out there about water and power use. And so we want to get squared away on that. Well, guess what? Bob Morris is the Lance Energy Chair at Montana Tech University. And yeah, he's an energy expert and has looked into this quite a bit. So we'll look at claims and blame, I guess, here today on Voices of Montana when it comes to data centers. Then also a bit later on, Mark Lambrecht is going to join us, CEO of the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. We'll have him weigh in on this as well. But there's a federal salmon ruling that could raise your power bill. We'll look at the pluses and minuses of that ruling today on Voices of Montana. So, yeah, there's a lot of things, I think, to explore about data centers. Energy costs, water, those things seem to rise to the top. But I think you can't have that discussion without looking at the value and the necessity of data centers nowadays as well. We're just not going to have a world that we can compete in effectively if we do not have data centers and more of this kind of generation, because that's just exactly where we're going. We'll get to the thoughts, actually, of Bob Morris, who is the Lance Energy Chair at Montana Tech University. And Bob, thank you for coming back on. I got to say, you guys, if you want to hear more, there is the Montana Chamber of Commerce is sponsoring a seminar today. It's a web seminar, so just go to the Chamber website and look it up here with Bob Morris. That'll be at 1 o'clock today, so you can get some more answers there. Bob, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Tom, and thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure to join you this morning.
Was really excited that you were available today as well, because we got a phone call. We were doing open phones Thursday. I think I expressed this to you and started talking about data centers. And, there's a lot of information out there, and I think some of it is misinformation as well, or maybe not complete information. And I guess that's to be expected, because people advocate for their purposes pretty strongly at times, but that leaves it up to us to decide, you know, what is more truthful about these types of things. And that's kind of tough, right? We're kind of in that area right now in Montana where they're looking at data centers, and one group in particular, I'll mention them, but it doesn't necessarily have to be them, but they have certainly come out and have a website full of information, is the Montana Environmental Information Center. What's your take, Bob? Why Montana? And then data centers. You know, just maybe give us that 10,000 foot plus and minus thing from your perspective.
Okay, thanks, Tom. And so, data centers are having a big impact on the world, and certainly on the United States. And now we're seeing that in Montana. And you look at it kind of at a 10,000 foot view. We're spending about $1 trillion a year in the United States on data centers, and that's expected to go up to somewhere around $2 trillion. And the question is this a bubble or a trend? And there's a lot of work being done on that, but the indications are it's more of a trend than a bubble. It's private capital. The spend is on the order of about 5% of our national GDP, which is a big deal, but it kind of compares to our investment in the interstate highway system or the chemical industry back in the late 1800s. And it's actually more like the chemical industry. And why do I say that? Well, the chemical industry really revolutionized modern living, and it increased productivity. And that's what the AI and the data centers are promising to do, is to boost our GDP growth from somewhere around 1% to 4%. And so that, you know, private funding, a boost in productivity, you know, all that leans towards more of a trend than a bubble. And then, of course, we're in a race with China on AI and data centers, and so it's a matter of national security. So I think they're here to stay, and will they slow down again? Maybe. You know, it's kind of hard to predict the future, but they got a lot of staying power, and obviously that's why we're now looking at Montana. You know, I think Virginia is the highest concentration of data centers in the world, but data center companies are looking around, and the reason that they like Montana is we've got relatively economical and reliable electricity or cool climate significantly reduces the amount of energy you need to cool. That's the number one energy cost is cooling these data centers. We also have a strong fiber optic network and then a strong highway and rail transport network for getting materials in and out. And then we've got an educated workforce and a friendly business environment. So all that adds up to make Montana look like a good candidate to share in the nation's push for data center construction.
Yeah, and what do they enable? As I talk about getting behind competition-wise with China and Russia and others who are really rushing there, you know, what do data centers enable in that sense in terms of competition for the United States individually but also corporately?
Well, I think it's impacting a lot of the white-collar workforce. My background was in software development for many years, and we struggled to try to improve the productivity of software development. Well, now AI in the right hands can write a lot of software, and so you're able to start to develop applications that took years with a team of people now are being done in a fraction of the time. And I know personally just using it to help with grammar and writing reports, and it's like, you know, just the little things that I'm not personally good at, AI can jump in and help me. And what we're seeing is it's impacting a lot of the white-collar workforce and making a significant improvement. And there's some companies, my son works for Microsoft, and he's required to use AI to help in their software development because they recognize the improvement. And I visited some national labs. They also have similar not mandates but encouragement for the workers to use AI because of the improvements. And then one question I get is, well, is AI going to replace my job? And well, the answer is no, but your job may be replaced by a person who knows how to use AI.
that's probably an eye-opening response from you, right? You look at them in the eyes and their eyebrows go up and, oh, yeah, okay, good point. And so they get busy. And I think people are starting to, embrace this a little bit. It's like you can't put the genie back in the bottle, especially when it comes to technology. It's out there and it only seems to go in one way. Hopefully we refine it too. The pluses and minuses of operation are one thing. Having them, in our communities is another. And people are pushing back on some claims, and I'm gonna share some of those with you. And I'll just, water is one of them. That a call we took from a caller last week had claimed that 8 million gallons of water a day is the usage for data centers. And I know that's not true. And I think you have to go back a few years. Maybe there were some systems that were using quite a few. The Montana Environmental Information Center says it's 5 million gallons of water a day. This is a big concern. What is it?
Correct. Well, Tom, I think the answer is it varies. But if you look at a data center in Montana, and again, I mentioned that Montana is a favorable location because of our cool climate. So with the adiabatic or evaporative cooling systems, they're able to run basically air-cooled until the outside temperature gets above 80 degrees Fahrenheit. And I ran a recent profile here for Butte, and it gets above 80 for about a month and a half in the summer, maybe 2 months, for 4 hours a day. And during that time, what they'll need to use is some misters on their cooling towers, but we're running a closed-loop system, and so that particular data center that's proposed for Montana, a 200 megawatt data center, will use about 16 million gallons per year, and that's about the same as a 100 room hotel with a restaurant. So because it uses mostly air cooling and it only needs outside water to spray on the cooling towers to assist in the cooling. So the water use is pretty minimal. And now some data center designs in years past in hotter climates, yeah, they could use millions of gallons per day, but we're looking at on the order of 16 million gallons per year for a data center here in Montana.
And I appreciate that. And 16 million per year is quite a bit less than 8 million per day, so to speak. So that's important to note here.
Right, and Tom, I want to put that in perspective.
Yeah.
So we've looked at it for the data centers here in Butte, and the present potable water system in Butte is about 6.3 million gallons per day, and and our industrial system is about 2.5 million gallons per day. And if you take that 16 million gallons per year and you average it out, it's about 0.05 million gallons per day. So it's very minimal compared to the present water use. Now, with that said, it's going to use all of that water during July and August, so we're going to need to design the, you know, use our industrial water system and some storage to make sure that it works out during our summer stream flows. But, you know, on all in, it's a pretty minor impact on the water system here. And in Butte, it's going to use all surface water, and so there's zero impact to any wells. And then also there's no discharge, so the water that does come in is evaporated to the atmosphere, and so there's no discharge. So it's really environmentally pretty safe.
Are they all like this?
I think it's going to vary from data center to data center, but all the newer ones are looking at what I describe as a closed loop / evaporative cooling system, or they're going to some completely closed loop. Some of the newer ones are so those. That's what I'm seeing with new designs, but I think it's going to vary from data center to data center.
There was also a claim, again, this was from a caller as well, and I think this caller was following information that they were led to believe as well about, and I didn't quite get it, but sludge in wells, all right? The claim was if you let these data centers use groundwater or aquifer water, it's going to dramatically impact everybody who's got a well. And then sludge in wells was tossed out there. What do you know about that?
Boy, I haven't heard that before, Tom. And the sludge, the only thing I can think about is there any discharge? And with the data center proposed here in Butte, there's zero discharge from the cooling system. You know, it's hooked up to the normal metro sewer for the kitchen and toilets and so forth. That's just normal discharge there, but there is no discharge from the cooling system of the data center. So I really don't see how that could impact any of the wells.
Yeah, and that's part of the issue too, I think, is that it's easy at this point to take something that may be negative in one area or from a data center that's 20 years old and say this is what's going to happen. So I think clearing up the information here is important. What do you, and we got a breakup coming, but what do you worry about? If there's data centers, and I suppose the vetting is a big part of it, and I think part of the problem too is that these companies don't lay out their blueprints entirely for the public to see, and I think there's a reason behind that. What's your concern? What do you find valid super valid in some of these things that we're hearing?
Well, I think that, you know, when I first heard that data centers were coming to Montana, I was concerned, and so I went and did homework on electric power and water, and we do need to be prudent and careful with our resources. But what I'm learning is that, you know, the data centers don't want to come to town and be the bad guy. There's also safeguards in place with electric power rates, and then also a lot of the environmental permitting and regulations through the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. There's quite a bit of robust safeguards in place. So, you know, I really, after studying this for several months, I don't have any big concerns, and actually I see some plus sides that maybe we can talk about in a little bit here.
We're talking about data centers today, the pluses and minuses here as well. I think we've talked about the need for them. I don't think that we can go backwards. This is technology. That only seems to go one way. We need to catch up with it or stay up with it. I know our ethics kind of fall behind our technological movements forward. But, this is what we're doing here today on Voices of Montana, is kind of going through some of the claims out there about data centers that will do this and it will not do that, with Bob Morris. And Bob Morris, a long history in the energy industry, as I mentioned, and he is the Lance Energy Chair at Montana Tech University. Bob, I imagine you've been kind of busy lately, because energy is really a topic of discussion, and it has been and should be for a lot of years. I don't think our math is adding up. I think we need to look at, what kind of green, clean energy we are using and how to use it maybe more efficiently. But that folds into what is one of the major questions about data centers, and that is electricity use and costs. Will ratepayers be forced to pay extra because these energy companies are now under contract with some of these data centers? How does that work in your research?
Well, thanks, Tom. And yes, the data centers will use a lot of electric power, and so they're rightfully concerned about what's that going to do to my electricity rates. And so there's a couple things. One is if you look at market trends and where data centers come to town, and there's been a number of studies that showed when data centers come to town, they pay more than their fair share. They generate extra profits for the utility, which puts downward pressure on the rates for the existing customers. And that's a couple different studies have shown that. So there's a market force there. And the reason is the data centers, they want to be a good neighbor. And so that's one effect. The other one is what kind of regulation and laws are in place to protect the ratepayers. And in Montana, we're unique in that we have a statute on the books that requires any load above 5 megawatts to come to the Public Service Commission and demonstrate that by them connecting to the network, it will not negatively impact that. And so that's a rare statute, and then the Montana Public Service Commission will be enforcing that regulation or that law on the data center. So not, we have kind of a belt and suspenders. Market forces pushing the prices down, and then the regulations also doing that. So then the question is, well, there's a lot of power. Where's all that going to come from? And right now in Montana, there's 3 data centers that have bubbled to the top. It's Atlas Data Centers in Butte, initially 150 megawatts, and maybe finally 150 megawatts. Quantica in Broadview, anywhere from 500 to upwards to 1,000 megawatts, and then Sabey here in Butte, of starting at 50 and going to 200 or 250. And so what I've looked at is, where's the energy come from? Well, it turns out that Northwestern Energy recently acquired 590 megawatts from Avista and Puget Sound Energy in their Colstrip shares, and that's enough to cover Atlas and Sabey.
Oh, good.
And actually, you look at Northwestern Energy's integrated resource plan, and they show by bringing that extra Colstrip share back into the rate base, it actually lowers their energy cost from $41 down to $35 a megawatt hour. So there's data that shows that will put some downward pressure on the prices. So I think, you know, there's some positive things there. The other thing I see is that you know, we're going to need to replace Colstrip in about 16 years. That's a major investment. Our transmission network is aging. We need some significant investment. And if you look back at when the last time Montana really grew our network was when we built Colstrip, and that was done with a lot of regional out-of-state investors, and they're not investing in Montana anymore. And so for us to afford to upgrade our electric network, we're going to need some outside capital, and I see these data centers as one source of funding. And in fact, you look at the Quantica data center, they're proposed there by Broadview, they're planning on bringing their own power, and they're planning on standing up somewhere in the upwards to 3 gigawatts of wind, solar, and battery.
Yeah.
They're the only significant renewable resource investment that I'm aware of in Montana. I'm sure there's some others, but there's 3 gigawatts right there, which is, you know, pretty much close to our present total capacity. So there's evidence that, you know, these data centers have positive influence. Now, should people be concerned? Do we need to watch it? Absolutely. But I see a lot of positive outcomes and welcoming the data centers to town.
Yeah, and they it's called the bring your own powers is what they've
Correct.
Said here on the radio. And I guess I'm a little skeptical of that because they need a lot of power. And
yes.
It's easier said than done in that regard. What do you think? And if Quantica is successful there, I mean, they're going to use up to 1,000 megawatts and put, you know, maybe 3 gigawatts onto the system. And most of that is clean energy as well, or green energy, I guess they want to call it. I'm skeptical. Are you?
Well, I was, and engineers and scientists are skeptical, so
right.
I started looking into it. If you look at, you know, 3 gigawatts of wind and solar in Montana, and I looked at typical wind energy in Montana and 3 gigawatts maximum, but, you know, it might go from 0 to 3, you know, several times during the week, and it will all average out to 1 gigawatt. But if you try to run a data center right off of that raw wind energy, you're gonna dump your data center every day or two. But if you're able to take that total energy and move that out onto the grid, and then the grid's got a bunch of other resources for, you know, gas turbines, coal turbines, for what we call firming that up, and then go ahead and so sell your energy out to the grid intermittent and then buy back a 1 gigawatt of firm energy, and now it starts to make sense. So the data center really has generated enough energy, and then they're partnering with the Northwestern or Western Electric Coordinating Council, whatever part of the grid they're working on, to firm that energy up. And so it's really a good symbiotic relationship between the data center offering green energy and the grid firming it up and providing a steady day in, day out, 1 gigawatt to the data center. So it's really a pretty neat arrangement.
Yeah, I like that. And more and more, we see these companies bringing their own ethical responsibility and environmental right. responsibility to play in these local communities too. So I appreciate that.
Correct.
Bob Morris is with us, Lance Energy Chair, Montana Tech University. He's going to be key in this chamber seminar, and this is free. Go to the Montana Chamber of Commerce website and sign up. That's at 1 o'clock today, Q&A session. He'll answer a lot more of these questions. I appreciate you coming on here. I got 2.5 minutes, and I want to ask kind of a closing comment here. If there are guardrails, and it seems like we do have a lot of them in place, right? You talked about water. You talked about electricity guardrails. If there are more guardrails needed, so it's two parts here. What's the most misinformation that you hear? And if there are guardrails that are needed, in your mind, where are they needed?
Well, the two biggest ones I hear are they're going to drive up electricity rates, and so I explained the market forces and then the approach the data centers are to bringing their own power and the statute. So that's really not a concern for me. And then the water, that was another valid concern, but you chase that down. And depending upon the design of the cooling system in those data centers, they can have a very minimal impact. And so those were the two biggest for me, Tom, and I'm pretty comfortable with them. We need to stay involved and make sure the data centers are doing the right thing, but they want to come and be a good neighbor too, and so I think we just need to work together, and I encourage the dialogue to keep going. Let's keep raising questions, and let's let the science and the economics play out for us.
Yeah, they've made claims about tax impact and infrastructure impact. Do you feel that they bear out? There was one note here in Virginia, $875 million tax revenue in 2024 from data centers there. That's 38% of their entire revenue and 3% of their land footprint. Are you seeing that bear out, that there are bona fide tax benefits?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a that we've looked at that here in Butte Silver Bow, and having a data center here in town from the tax perspective is really good. We've also done a lot of research with Quincy Washington, who hosts the Sabey Data Centers, and their superintendent of schools came out, and he said, I've got a $90 million new high school, and he said data centers, Sabey and others, paid for $60 million of it. And then he talked about the program that they set up, the data centers set up in the high school to teach cybersecurity and software engineering in the high school, so the students are able to graduate with these certificates and go to work in the data center for $60,000 a year. And they said, for the first time, our kids are able to stay in town. We're not sending them out of state.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of benefits that these data centers bring. I think we need to keep our minds open and welcome them to town.
Great stuff, Bob. Good luck today. Appreciate you, sir.
Thank you, Tom, it's been a pleasure.
Again, energy, if we just don't have the math adding up correctly, I don't think we have the resiliency in our economy yet. Our affordable energy in this country is one of the things that continues to make us strong. And so when we look at rulings out there that are going to have an impact on our energy, we want to understand them. Are they justified? And that's the question we ask when a federal judge in Oregon ordered operational changes to Columbia and Snake River dams to increase the spill and to protect, they say, endangered salmon runs. There's been a lot of work done regarding salmon runs and those dams and how efficient they have become, I think, is impressive to many. But there are some who are unsatisfied. So this judge has this ruling. How will it impact us? Mark Lambrick joins us now, CEO of the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association. They serve tens of thousands of Montanans. And we look kind of really at this one. It's more in the west, the Bonneville Power Administration. I think there's several markets. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Morning, Tom. I'm doing well.
Good. Just get right into it, and I'm glad you could make it on here. I think it was Flathead. Some of those co-ops over there rely heavily on it. Let's get your sense on that. We'll go back to data centers because I know that's another industry that's impacting our electricity providers. But this ruling, I think we've talked about it. We've scratched our heads about it. The salmon runs there are pretty stable. What's your initial thoughts, Mark?
Well, what happened here, Tom, is last Wednesday, a district court judge in Oregon issued a decision that makes permanent the operational changes that were already underway at hydroelectric facilities on the Columbia River system. Now, those were operational changes that were agreed to by previous administration, state of Oregon, some Pacific Northwest tribes, and some environmental advocacy groups to increase the amount of water that's spilled, decrease the hydroelectric generation. And the idea that they had is if you have kind of run a river that would assist in recovery of a threatened salmon and steelhead species. So, but there's also evidence, mind you, that it's actually harming fish. You might recall a series that Montana Electric Cooperative Association did in its magazine, Rural Montana, a four-part series where we did some investigation and determined that the investments, the $2 billion of investments that ratepayers have made in fish passages and fish hatcheries and other conservation measures are actually working. We believe that what's more important and more impactful on these populations is oceanic conditions. So what happened after that is the Trump administration came in and they tore up that agreement, and then these plaintiffs brought the lawsuit that was ultimately decided by that Oregon judge last Wednesday. So now we're left at a situation where we're going to have continued increase in spill, continued decrease in availability of clean, affordable, reliable, dispatchable hydroelectricity generation that is marketed by the Bonneville Power Administration, especially to public power, including the eight electric cooperatives in western Montana.
Was this?
And they serve more than 220,000 consumers in that part of the state.
Was this that so-called secret agreement under the Biden administration that they did not invite any industry experts? They did not invite anybody who might be opposed to the project? Was that this document that the judge ruled on?
You got it, Tom. That's the one.
How solid is the judge's ruling? An administrative, so it's a policy issue. What did he rule on? Is this codified somewhere?
Well, it's a legal issue. And so, the next step in the process would be an appeal to the Ninth Circuit. So I know the attorneys for, the interveners and the defendants are discussing that. So this is a long ways from being concluded, but it was a disappointing decision. NECA condemned it in a very public way because we believe and we're confident that the facts are on our side. And, the most important aspect from our perspective is the availability of affordable, reliable power to our members, which is guaranteed to them by federal statute. So, that's why these facilities were constructed in the first place. And, that's what the federal law says, that we're supposed to have the benefit of these dams is to provide that reliable, affordable electricity to public power and electric cooperatives in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Northwest.
Well, and there's irrigators, there's shipping. I mean, there's a lot of considerations here outside of just the salmon as well. And I know there's the courts are very sympathetic to environmental causes, especially some courts. And, of course, you're dealing with a court in Oregon as well. And so I tried to look this up, Mark, about how much water, additional water they're talking about spilling over and how much they think that is going to have an impact on the current runs. I don't have a square answer on that.
Yeah, that's tough because you're talking about at least eight different federal hydro plants, and so, you know, the flow is different at each one. But, yeah, those, that's some of the data that will be coming forward here.
What's the power impact? What's the economic impact?
Well, the economic impact is that the Bonneville Power Administration, instead of having that availability of power from that hydro system, will have to go out onto the market at those times where they don't have enough power to serve the needs of the homes and farms and ranches and businesses that are served. And so, as you know, we've seen this in situations before where we've had peak demand throughout the region, and when PPA has to go out onto the market, it's a lot more expensive. You know, of course, it depends on temperature and the amount of demand at the time, but that's the net result here. It will be less power available, BPA going out onto the market, Montana's consumers having to pay more for electricity.
Yeah, and do you have any, I think there were some figures released regarding what you estimate it'll cost ratepayers in the inland and Pacific Northwest?
You know, that's not a figure that,
okay,
that is something that is static right now. I think that, you know, estimates would depend on what the flows would be and, you know, the availability of precipitation to direct those flows and, you know, how much reduction is occurring at each different dam.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's my take on it, too, was after looking into it, too, that those figures, it's really hard to say you've got, you know, confidence in them. If they reclassified hydropower as clean or green or alternative energy, would that have changed this ruling?
No. Okay. No, this is really about species recovery. That's the focus of the groups that are involved as plaintiffs.
Okay, so being if hydro was reclassified as a cleaner energy source, it would have no impact on the ruling.
No, it wouldn't have any impact on the ruling specifically.
Get that. Chief Executive Officer with MECA, the Montana Electric Cooperative Association, Mark Lambrecht, is with us here. Let's go into, because I know we've talked in the past about it, and maybe you've got some figures in there. We'll take a break here in just a little bit, and we'll get on to data centers. But the effectiveness of the Salmon Run, that research that you did, is that going to be made available? Is that verifiable? Is that something that a judge can look at and say, hey, yeah, this might change things?
That information was presented to the judge. My understanding is he did not accept that data. But just for your listeners to understand, you know, I mentioned the $2 billion in investments in things like fish ladders, removable spillway weirs. There's transport of salmon down the river through the lock system. I mean, all of these efforts, along with other conservation efforts, have increased the survival of salmon runs. In fact, the survival rates exceed federal standards, especially for juvenile salmon, in excess of 93% survival.
Yeah.
So all of those investments are working. You know, it's like I mentioned, part of the problem that we need to know more about is oceanic conditions. You know, there are increased temperatures in the ocean where the salmon go, acidic conditions, things like that. Our national organization, NRECA, is actually encouraging the Trump administration to direct additional resources to scientific research on in that regard, find some facts that can help us determine what would be the best strategy to increase salmon recovery and steelhead recovery in the basin.
Yeah. Why was this that document? I thought the Trump administration had done away with that, as you said. You know, why is that document enforceable then?
Well, it was an agreement reached between the what they call the six sovereigns and the Biden administration. The Trump administration, when they came into play, rescinded that agreement. And like I said, you know, that's what prompted the litigation from those six sovereigns against the federal government. And its enforceability is the purview of the district court, pending appeal to the Ninth Circuit and perhaps eventually to the Supreme Court.
Well, and this is where I think we're going to get more science involved, hopefully, in answering this question about, you know, is this just more activist litigation that we have seen deployed to halt projects and to achieve singular agendas? Or, you know, is there more weight on this?
No, I certainly think it fits within that characterization, Tom. And, you know, I just wanted to make sure our listeners understand, too. I mean, first and foremost, the responsibility and the interests of the electric cooperatives is affordable, reliable power to its members. But we believe there's a true balance between that and taking care of concerns about threatened and endangered species and salmon and steelhead. We don't think these goals are mutually exclusive. That's why, you know, we've supported investments made by ratepayers in salmon and other species recovery, but also maintaining that affordable, reliable power that's so critically important to our members, especially in times of peak demand and, you know, brought on by extremes in temperature.
Yeah. No, that's a good point, too. Bombs are bursting in air across Iran and the Middle East, the U.S. and Israel attempting to liberate the country from government for the past 50 years, violently oppressed citizens there, sponsored terrorism across the globe. Mehrdad Kia, professor, University of Montana, Iranian-born, will be joining us on Friday to talk more about that. Got a couple of minutes here as we conclude. Mark Lambrecht, I want to thank Bob Morris on earlier, Lance Energy Chair, Montana Tech. Again, it's 1 o'clock, Montana Chamber of Commerce web seminar. That one's free. Go check that out. Some comments about data centers. And Mark, thank you for coming on, too. You know, if there's anything to kind of finish up there with the salmon ruling due, but I'm moving a little bit to data centers and really want to see what your overall thoughts are as an energy expert for years and years.
Well, thank you, Tom. So, yeah, you know, I know our electric cooperative members received calls from data centers for several years now, inquiring about availability of power for them. And, you know, we have such a limited capacity in Montana right now that I think the next part of this is for data centers to develop their own generation. In fact, there was legislation passed last session to allow them to do that, you know, following certain parameters. But, you know, I was appointed, like Bob Morris was, to the Governor's Energy Task Force. We've been working for quite a few months now. You know, our charge is to develop for his consideration and that of the legislature and developers, understanding what the obstacles to development of additional generation and transmission capacity would be and how to overcome them. And so data centers are topic one on that. And so, you know, from our perspective for electric cooperatives who would like to be able to serve that load, we want to make sure, though, that if data centers are going to be developing their own generation, that our consumers, our members, are not subsidizing that development. And so I know there are entities out there such as Basin Electric Power Cooperative, MDU. They've talked about plans to and have put in motion plans to make sure that if data centers are going to develop their own generation and transmission interconnect, they will pay for that and they will build it 25% greater than what they need so that that excess is taking care of their responsibilities for reserve power. So those situations where we're facing energy shortages, you know, there's an opportunity for that excess energy to help out other consumers.
Good stuff. There's still a lot to go. And, there, you know, there's something new every day, right, in the energy industry. I appreciate you coming on, Mark, and the work that you guys do and the linemen and all the folks that you have working all across the state for the electric co-ops. Just salt of the earth people, and I love to be around them, sir. So thanks for what you do, Mark.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.